Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. I have a few friends that suffer from migraines. When they are having an attack, you can see it on their face. Color drained, their eyes tightened into a squint, forehead drawn down. It is a hell of a thing to live with. Today, we're going to read about numerous theories on treating and preventing migraines, as well as a medical mystery that was originally diagnosed as migraine. If you suffer from migraines, you have my empathy, and I hope there's something in here for you today. We're starting with The Washington Post, written by Sandra G. Boodman, published January 11, 2016. Doctors dismissed his pain as migraines. Then they said he had 24 hours to live. A huge sense of relief washed over Brad Chesevoirs when a Maryland emergency room doctor told him the good news. He had not suffered a heart attack or a stroke as he had feared. Instead, he was being discharged with a diagnosis of headache, although doctors weren't sure of its cause. Several hours earlier, on the day after Thanksgiving 2013, Chesevoirs' family had summoned an ambulance to their Montgomery County home after he became suddenly weak and unable to walk. But by the time he got to a hospital, the 60-year-old commercial property manager was feeling much better, walking and talking without difficulty. After undergoing CT and MRI brain scans, as well as numerous blood tests, doctors sent Chesevoirs home and advised him to follow up with his internist. Less than 5 weeks later, Chesevoirs was back in a hospital, his life measured in hours. He was teetering on the edge, recalled Edward Olisi, the chairman of neurosurgery at MedStar Washington Hospital Center, who treated him there. The emergency room doctors had been partly right, but Chesevoirs' problem turned out to be every bit as life-threatening as a stroke or a heart attack. And in the intervening weeks, two specialists who saw him had missed it. "You know, you're lucky," Olisi recalled telling Chesevoirs shortly after they met. Without emergency surgery, the neurosurgeon said, patients with his condition are the people who go to sleep one night and don't wake up. A few weeks before the Thanksgiving episode, Chesevoirs had suddenly begun experiencing lightheadedness and tingling on his left side. "I felt as if I might not be able to walk or might collapse," he recalled. When an episode occurred in a grocery store parking lot, Chesevoirs' first thought was that he was having a stroke. He got back in his car and examined his face in the mirror, unable to detect a facial droop that is a characteristic sign of stroke. The odd feeling passed quickly, and Chesevoirs, who had no underlying health problems that could predispose him to a stroke, felt reassured. He'd had similar episodes a few years earlier, but doctors had found nothing. This time, his shakiness seemed more pronounced when he stood up after sitting. Chesevoirs also began suffering from headaches. The doctors who reviewed his tests at the emergency room said the only thing of significance was evidence of a possible old brain bleed. Had he fallen or hit his head? Chesevoirs told them that he had banged his head on the mantel, putting wood in his fireplace, and while roughhousing with his teenage sons, but never hard enough to see stars or lose consciousness. "They didn't seem too concerned about it," Chesevoirs recalled. Doctors told him they suspected his head pain was caused by either migraines or cluster headaches. After conferring with his internist, Chesevoirs consulted a neurologist. Looking at the images Chesevoirs had brought with him from his ER visit, he recalled that she seemed concerned that something on his spine might be causing the tingling. She ordered more tests and scheduled a follow-up appointment for January 21st. But over the next few weeks, Chesevoirs' headaches worsened. "I'd go to bed and wake up in the middle of the night feeling like flaming railroad spikes were thrusting into my skull," he said. "But at that point, I wasn't too concerned because so many tests had been done and there was nothing awful found. I figured it was some kind of headache that could be treated with medication." On New Year's Eve, while watching a movie at home, Chesavoir stood up, complained that his head hurt, and pitched face forward onto a coffee table, briefly losing consciousness. His wife, Carol Klein, called an ambulance. By the time it arrived, Chesavoir seemed to be functioning normally. He walked out of the house, met the crew in the driveway, and sent them away, saying he was okay. Klein, an intellectual property lawyer, had grown increasingly worried about her husband. The scariest thing was that it seemed like his personality was changing, she recalls. He just wasn't right. Brad is very gregarious and outgoing. He became cautious and would look like he was on edge and afraid. By January 2, 2014, the headaches were worse. Chesavoir called the neurologist's office and saw a second specialist. The first was out of town, who told him that his problem was most likely an atypical migraine, which is not preceded by the aura many migraine patients describe. I thought, finally, I have a diagnosis, Chesavoir recalled. The neurologist prescribed amitriptyline, an antidepressant frequently used to prevent migraines. Chesavoir began taking the drug. A few days later, he telephoned the new neurologist after developing double vision in his right eye. We see this with this medication, Chesavoir remembers the doctor saying. Cut the dose in half. On Friday, January 11th, Chesavoir called the doctor again, minutes after his office opened. His double vision was worse and accompanied by zigzag lines. He was terrified that he was going blind. I stressed to the doctor's assistant who took the call that this was very serious, said Chesavoir, adding that he was assured that the doctor would call him back. Chesavoir said he never heard from the neurologist. On Monday morning, Chesavoir called his wife's ophthalmologist, who agreed to see him. She had an opening in her schedule that morning. Klein drove her husband to the office. Minutes after the doctor peered into Chesavoir's dilated eyes, she issued terse instructions to Klein. Drive straight to the emergency room at Washington Hospital Center, where she was on staff. Don't go home first or stop anywhere en route. Chesavoir had papilledema, a badly swollen optic nerve caused by excess pressure on his brain and needed immediate attention. When they arrived, Chesavoir said the ER was a zoo. The ophthalmologist later told Chesavoir she regretted not calling an ambulance, which would have expedited his admission. He and Klein were sent to a bay to wait for a doctor. On the other side of the curtain was a family whose members began loudly playing cell phone ringtones. I lost it and started screaming at them that my head was about to explode and to please keep it down. Chesavoir was admitted several hours later after undergoing MRI and CT scans. He was told he would be meeting with Alisi, the neurosurgeon on call. Alisi minced no words. Chesavoir had suffered a brain bleed, an acute subdural hematoma, which had grown so large it was now the size of an adult's palm. Without brain surgery, which Alisi planned to perform first thing the next morning, Chesavoir would probably die. Scans, including those performed on Thanksgiving weekend 6 weeks earlier, showed evidence of multiple bleeds, some old and some recent. Blood was pressing on brain tissue, causing his visual disturbances, weakness, and searing headaches. A subdural hematoma occurs when blood pools in the space between the dura, which covers the brain, and the surface of the brain. It frequently results from a head injury that can occur during a fall. In some cases, the bump is so minor, patients don't remember it. In other cases, there is no bump at all. Alisi remembers one patient who developed a serious brain bleed after a violent sneeze. It's a closed space, like a pressure cooker, Alisi said. A buildup of pressure in a confined space can cause the brain to herniate or shift from its proper position, which is often fatal. They basically missed it, said Alisi of the brain bleeds, adding that diagnosis is easier in retrospect. One reason for the error, he speculated, is that a neurosurgeon did not read the original scans. A radiologist who read Chesavoir's CT scan raised the possibility of old bleeds, but other doctors did not pursue that. By the time Alisi saw Chesavoir, there was no choice other than surgery. Klein said he told the couple that Chesavoir probably had less than 24 hours to live when he reached the ER. "I just sort of felt like I was waiting for the inevitable," Chesavoir recalls of the night before his operation. Klein remembers feeling terrified and trying to calm their children, who were then 16 and 20. The surgery went well. In the recovery room, Chesavoir said he felt so much better that I hadn't realized how bad I had felt. Recovery was arduous and involved lying flat on his back for 2 days. At one point, Chesavoir suddenly became confused, triggering fears that he might have suffered cognitive damage, a known complication of the surgery, or another bleed. But the confusion resolved within hours and was chalked up to postoperative swelling. "That was the scariest part of the whole episode," Chesavoir said. "I wasn't that afraid of dying, but I didn't want to be a burden on my family." Several weeks after he was sent home, Chesavoir, whose hobbies include photography, was taking pictures again. His vision dramatically improved. After 3 months, he had fully recovered. "The ordeal was life-changing," he said. "When things bother me now, I just have to remind myself that in the continuum of problems, this is very small." Klein said that her husband's experience has shaken her faith in doctors. In retrospect, she said, she's not sure what else they could have done. "There was nothing different to do," she said. "We had gone to an ER and seen 2 neurologists. I felt like we had covered the bases. There were so many misses." And that was a medical mystery from the Washington Post. Now we go to Business Insider for an article titled, "This Funky-Looking Inhaler Could Be a Huge Help for Migraine Sufferers Everywhere." This was written by Lydia Ramsey and published on February 6th, 2016. Anybody who has ever had a headache knows how debilitating they can be. Magnify that, toss in some nausea and light sensitivity, and you've got a migraine. About 37 million Americans experience migraines, some of them daily. For those who get them frequently, the pain can seriously cut down on productivity and sometimes even keep them going to work. But a new device that recently got FDA approval wants to help fix that. The device is an inhaler containing the prescription drug sumatriptan, a longtime staple for migraine treatment. It goes by the name Onzetra X-Sale and uses about 80% less medication than the typical oral dose of 100 milligrams. Unlike pills that are swallowed and need to have their medication absorbed through the stomach, the inhaler sends the medication right into the bloodstream via the soft tissue lining, the mucous membrane of the sinus cavity. That can be a huge benefit for people who are nauseated, one side effect of migraines, or have trouble taking pills. Up until now, people with migraines that needed more than over-the-counter painkillers could take prescription sumatriptan, best known by its brand name, Imitrex, via a pill. According to the NIH, sumatriptan works by doing the following: narrowing the blood vessels in your head, prohibiting pain signals from being sent to your brain, and stopping natural substances that cause pain, nausea, and other symptoms of migraine from getting released. If sumatriptan doesn't work for you, injections and nasal sprays are the next courses of action. Avanir Pharmaceuticals, the company that makes the new migraine inhaler, wants to be a simpler alternative to needles and potentially gross-tasting nasal sprays. The one thing you hear consistently in the migraine category from both the physicians and the patients, it's not that the drug's active ingredients are bad or they don't work. The issue is the delivery systems are not great, Avanir CEO Rohan Palekar told Business Insider. So when Avanir heard about an inhaler made by OptiNose that might be able to deliver migraine medicine more directly, their only thought was, why hadn't anybody thought of this earlier? Unlike the typical inhaler that gets breathed into the lungs, people using the Onzetra X-Sale breathe out into the tube with the nose piece inserted into a nostril. That keeps the medication staying at the back of your nose, rather, and away from your throat and stomach, said Palekar. It's the same mechanism as blowing up a balloon. The back of the throat closes, so you're able to push air into the balloon. Dr. Roger Cady, the director of the Headache Care Center and someone who is heavily involved in developing the new medication, is excited about its potential. Cady has been working with sumatriptan since the early 90s and hopes it could one day be an alternative to injections, which work quickly but can come with some serious side effects. If you get to the right area of the nose, it's a perfect area to target, Cady told Business Insider. While the front of the nose might be great at keeping unfamiliar objects out of the body, toward the back of the nose and the sinus cavity, there's a thin layer of soft tissue where drugs can be absorbed into the bloodstream. Because it's so direct, this method doesn't require as much medication to get the same pain-relieving effect. That has the potential to be incredibly helpful in preventing medication overuse headache. Essentially, if headache medication is used too frequently, it may lead to more frequent headaches in the future. There's some speculation that a lower dose can help prevent these headaches, but so far there hasn't been any data to confirm that. Now we go to stat news of October 27th, 2016. 4. Have a kid with a migraine? Placebos work as well as drugs. Sugar pills worked as well at preventing kids' migraines as two commonly used headache medicines, but had fewer side effects, in a study that may lead doctors to rethink how they treat a common ailment in children and teens. It's the first rigorous head-to-head test in kids of two generic prescription drugs also used for adults' migraines, topiramate, an anti-seizure medicine, and amitriptyline, an antidepressant. The idea was to see if either drug could reduce by half the number of days kids had migraines over a month's time. Both drugs worked that well, but so did placebo sugar pills. The results really challenge what is typical practice today by headache specialists, said study author Scott Powers, a psychologist at Cincinnati Children's Hospital's Headache Center. The study was released online Thursday in the New England Journal of Medicine. The National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke and National Institute of Child Health and Human Development paid for the research. The fact that it shows that two of the most commonly used medications are no more effective than a placebo and have adverse effects makes a very clear statement, said Dr. Leon Epstein, neurology chief at Ann and Robert Lurie H. Children's Hospital of Chicago. Epstein said it should lead neurologists to rely on other prevention strategies. He advises lifestyle changes, including getting in more sleep and reducing stress, which he said can help prevent migraines in teen patients. Up to 10% of U.S. school-aged kids have migraines. The debilitating headaches tend to persist into the teen years and adulthood. Over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medicines, including ibuprofen and acetaminophen, can help reduce symptoms. The only government-approved migraine medication for kids is topiramate, which is known by the brand names Topamax and Qdexi, but it is only approved for those 12 and up. The two study drugs are inexpensive and used in children and teens in part because of benefits seen with adults. But there's no strong research showing they are effective in kids, Powers said. The study included about 300 kids aged 8 to 17 enrolled at 31 centers. They had 11 migraines on average in the month before the study began and were randomly assigned to take either of the drugs or placebo pills daily for 6 months. Migraine frequency in the study's last month was compared with what kids experienced before the study. At least half of kids in each group achieved the study goal, reducing migraine frequency by half. Side effects from the drugs were common, including fatigue, dry mouth, and forgetfulness. Almost one-third of kids on topiramate also had tingling sensations in their hands, arms, legs, or feet. There was one suicide attempt in the topiramate group, another known side effect of that drug. The side effects were not unexpected, but given the risks, the results suggest the drugs shouldn't be first-line prevention treatments for kids' migraines, Powers said. And we go now to Marijuana may stop your brutal headache right in its tracks. And this was published by Men's Health, written by Krista Scobbett on June 27, 2017. Migraines are notoriously difficult to control, but now there may be one surprising treatment that can stop the brutal headache before it even starts: marijuana. At least, that's what research presented at the Congress of the European Academy of Neurology in Amsterdam suggests. In the first part of the study, researchers recruited 48 chronic migraine sufferers to determine an effective dosage of a combination of tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, the psychoactive component of marijuana, and bedrolite, a cannabidiol found in pot, in reducing headache pain. After testing the combination on volunteers, they found no benefit in pain reduction until it reached 100 milligrams. They discovered the therapeutic dose to be 200 milligrams, which led to a 55% decrease in pain. In the second part of the study, the researchers tested how effective the 200 milligram THC/cannabidiol combo was at preventing headache in 79 migraine and 48 cluster headache sufferers, in comparison to more tried and true methods. After 3 months of treatment, the oral cannabinoid combo triggered a 40.4% reduction in headache attacks in the migraine sufferers, just slightly better than the 40.1% drop seen in those given the antidepressant amitriptyline to thwart the attacks. The combo was only effective in treating cluster headaches if the sufferer also experienced migraine as a kid. Side effects of the treatment included drowsiness and trouble paying attention, the researchers found. Because this research has only been presented at a conference, it hasn't yet undergone a peer review, so it's still considered preliminary. And it's not clear if consuming marijuana in a typical fashion, say smoking a joint instead of consuming the specific oral combination, would have the same effect. Still, it's not the first to link marijuana to a migraine benefit. Last year, a study published in Pharmacotherapy found that medical marijuana use decreased headache frequency from just over 10 a month to less than 5. Experts aren't sure exactly how it helps, but they believe cannabinoids may prevent the release of a neurotransmitter called serotonin. That's important since the chemical can cause narrowing of blood vessels, triggering headache pain. They may also have an anti-inflammatory effect that helps headaches too. There are still a lot of unknowns about how marijuana affects your health, and the drug is still illegal in many states. In the meantime, there are other things you can do to cut your headache risk. Avoiding headache-triggering foods can be a good start. We go on to cure your headache with this simple exercise routine. This also comes from Men's Health of November 5th, 2015, and was written by Ally Eves. A jog a day could keep your headaches at bay. Regular cardio workouts may help prevent migraines, a growing body of research suggests. Migraine patients had fewer headaches after doing 40-minute cycling workouts 3 times a week for 3 months, according to a Swedish study. The exercise routine worked just as well as one of the top migraine-preventing drugs, topiramate, but without the side effects of depression, tremors, and cognitive impairment. Aerobic workouts can help with regular headaches, too, says Alexander Moskop, MD, director of the New York Headache Center in Manhattan. There are a couple of theories on how it works. Breaking a sweat may relieve stress, says Dr. Moskop. Headaches are often triggered by stress, and if you eliminate the trigger, you nix the pain. It could also be endorphins at work, he says. The feel-good chemicals produced when you exercise actually block your pain sensors, acting as a natural painkiller. Since headaches can be caused by many different factors like genetics, lack of sleep, or certain foods, cardio won't be the solution for everyone, Dr. Moskop says. But one German study found that it helped 65% of patients, which makes it as effective as the best meds on the market. Dr. Moskop recommends his patients do a half hour of moderate intensity cardio, like jogging, biking, or swimming, 3 times a week. These workouts are meant to be slow and steady, as opposed to high intensity intervals that alternate between all-out sprints and rest. Overexerting yourself or increasing the intensity too quickly can trigger headaches in some people. So make sure your heart rate doesn't jump above 150 BPM. If you don't have a heart rate monitor, then breathe exclusively through your nose. You'll know you're going too hard if you can't maintain that breathing pattern. Your migraines could start disappearing in a couple of weeks, Dr. Moskop says. And lastly, from Business Insider, not all headaches hurt the same. This was written by Aaron Broadwin and Samantha Lee, published on February 10, 2017. Not all headaches hurt the same. Some, like migraines, make the sides of your head throb for days on end. Others, like tension headaches, may be felt as pressure in the neck and forehead and disappear in a few hours. Here's how to know what type of pain you're experiencing. Sinus headaches. Sinus headaches can feel like a sinus infection. You may have a runny or stuffy nose. You may feel tired. You may feel pain, pressure, and fullness in your cheeks, eyebrows, or forehead. It gets worse when you lean forward or lie down. Tension headaches. Tension headaches can be chronic, lasting for hours, for most days in a month, or they can be episodic, lasting from 30 minutes to 1 week, for fewer than 15 days a month. You may feel pressure along your forehead or along the sides or back of your head. You may feel a dull headache. Your scalp, neck, and shoulders may feel tender. Migraines. Migraines often progress through four stages, but not everyone experiences all of them. 1. Prodrome. Happens 1 or 2 days before a headache. This stage can include mood changes, food cravings, neck stiffness, increased thirst, or frequent yawning. 2. Aura. Happens before or during a migraine. You may see bright spots or light flashes, have vision loss, or experience body jerks. 3. Headache attack. Lasts 4 to 72 hours. Pain is often on the sides of your head and can feel like throbbing or pulsing. You may experience light sensitivity, nausea, vomiting, blurred vision, and lightheadedness. And lastly, 4. Postdrome. Happens after a migraine for up to a day. You may feel confused, moody, or dizzy. And that came from Business Insider with information from the Mayo Clinic. Thank you for tuning into SoundBody today. Please stay well and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been SoundBody, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.